5A. I've got a Clemson fan in Georgia and a Georgia fan in South Carolina to get to. Raven, Larry, you've been very patient with me, my friend. How are you doing this morning?
Thank you, Mickey. Doing wonderful. Blessed. And got a quick story, dropping back a subject or two to the umpire, and I think you and your listeners might enjoy.
Right.
Early 70s, not long out of college, I helped a buddy coach a little league team down in Perry, Florida. And the next year, they needed an umpire. So I decided I'd bite the bullet and umpire. Both coaches were good friends, but we had one kid who was just trouble. Every game, he was always trouble. So I told both my buddies, my coaches, if Wesley cuts up in this game, I'm going to throw him out. So sure enough, early in the game, Wesley comes sliding in the third. I run down there to cover the play. And I don't remember if he was safe or not, but he tried to kick the third baseman blatantly. So I said, okay, Wesley, you're out of here. And Wesley, I get the game going again, look over there, and Wesley's in the dugout. So stop the game again, go over, and Wesley, you got to get out of here. So he goes outside the fence, get the game going again, and I started noticing some people giggling. And then I started noticing some rocks kind of hitting around me. Looked behind me, and Wesley was back there chunking rocks over the backstop. Hitting at me. So I go outside the fence. Wesley, you got to get out of here. You got to leave the property. So we go over there. How'd you get here? I rode my bicycle. Where is it? It's over here. So we walk over to the bicycle. Said, it had a combination lock on it. Well, you need to go, Wesley. I forgot the combination. And I said, Wesley, I'm fixing to kick the spokes out of that bicycle if you don't get on it. Get out of here. And, of course, my buddies, the two coaches, were just roaring.
Oh,
they were in stitches laughing at me, and so were a lot of other people. But that's my umpiring story from way back.
I get kicked out of a game one time. Bill Wilhelm says that he was, I think it was an American Legion game he coached when he was in college, maybe, or sooner right out of college, he was coaching the American Legion team. And he tells a story that the other manager, other coach, was told he had to leave, and it was a visiting facility, and he didn't know exactly where to go, and the umpire said, just go where I can't see you. And he said the other guy went and stood on home plate. So,
Oh boy.
So, probably got him thrown out twice through all that.
So. I bet. Yeah,
that's good. Hey, how you feeling, man? You healthy? Got everything going right?
Yeah,
direction?
Getting there. Got one little surgery. It's healing, and hopefully be back on the pickleball court in about a week.
Take it easy on
my aunt. Prayers and I'm supportive of everybody.
Well, good, buddy. Glad to hear from you. Don't be a stranger.
Thank you.
All right,
buddy. Take care. Bye.
That was a Clemson fan in Georgia. Now I'm gonna go. In South Carolina, here, Georgia fan. Georgia, Greg, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, Mickey. How are you?
Fantastic.
I'm not going to talk Georgia football this morning. I want to have an objective.
Right.
I want to have an objective conversation as a outsider fan with the discussion that most of your callers have been talking about the past couple of weeks.
All right.
I just wonder, do you feel your freshman quarterback coming in is a generational quarterback? I mean, there's tons of quarterbacks out there. Do you feel like it has that it factor?
I think that he has the potential to have the it factor. But I don't think he has it right now. I don't think he's anywhere near where he's going to, where he can be, going to be, but I also don't know for sure that that's where he's going. I think that when you watch in the toolbox, I mean, it's a big, thick thighs and butt and legs. And I like that because, man, that's where the strength comes from, the throwing, all that. A power runner, a little bit of a swagger about him, athleticism, tall enough. There's a lot in there. But I also saw Billy Lucky come through here, and that was the same thing. And I saw that Michael Carr was going to be the same thing. And all these second-team quarterbacks everywhere that – you come in as a freshman, and the toolbox looks like it's got a lot in there, but they don't get developed, and the confidence goes, and then you're nowhere near what the potential we thought you were going to be. And George, you've got them too. I don't have to top of my head, but remember, but you've got them all up and down that thing too. And so, I think if the tools are in that toolbox, but it's too early to tell whether they're going to be developed or not.
here's where I'm asking, and you might know a difference in this. And you did you do you remember back? And I think the talk and the hype of the past 5 years has just been there about DJ and K. Okay, this is the year. Okay, this is the year they're going to turn it on. Do you remember, in retrospect, if you take a step back, that you really saw something different out of Watson and Lawrence than you did out of anybody else that you've seen? Did there had to be something that you that caught your eye that or either a maturity or a calmness in the something that you could see different, but you kept believing and talking yourself up. And I guess the reason I'm bringing it up is like it just seems like from an outsider, and you know Georgia has its own thing about different things. We've had quarterback situations. It seems like Clemson is really more and more by year putting pressure on a quarterback to come lead the team. And the truth is, you know, Matt Luke, who's a great coach, is this year where his line's going to step up to meet their potential and everywhere else. It's like it's not just the quarterback. And if you put so much pressure on that one position, you're almost ignoring the other 21 positions out there. And I get that this is a talk radio show and that's what we have to talk about, but the totality of the team is going into LSU, and that's a challenge on itself. And it's not just the quarterback that's going to have to be focused and know the plays. It's everybody else on the team too. I don't know. Do you see where I'm going with this?
I agree with you. Now, I'll say this. As Georgia fans, you have a different perspective because you won two national championships with Stetson Bennett, whereas you look at the last almost all other teams that have won national championships or Super Bowls, and occasionally you'll get a Trent Dilfer, but for the most part, it's a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning, and this game has changed so much. It is such a key position. And
I agree.
Last year, well, I mean, Indiana would not have won it without the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. And so, it is such a big deal there. And the other thing is, I saw Clemson teams win with Chris Morocco in 89 and Zippy's boy, Zippy Morocco's son, that he was not the most talented guy, but they had all kinds of talent around him that helped. And I don't think you've got that at Clemson right now. Where at Georgia, your lines of scrimmage are so stinking good right now. And those two tailbacks, those bruising tailbacks are so good right now. And those big tight ends are so good right now in the front seven on defense that I do think you can have game managers in there and win. So a Clemson perspective is different. Clemson's not as good as Georgia on the lines of scrimmage right now. Whereas,
well, I'm excited about that part. I've told you over the summer, I'm excited. Well, listen to you talk about Georgia.
Yeah.
But I guess just my thing was is I didn't know y'all put a lot on DJ and K. I listened to it over the years. A lot that it's coming. It's coming. Watch out for it. And it didn't. And the letdown was so huge. And
that's a good point. That's a good point. But now remember this. I mean, the reason, you know, the hype of Deshaun Watson, it started against Georgia, but you can understand why Clemson fans will get excited in his very first start. Deshaun Watson against North Carolina goes 27 of 36 for 435 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 1 pick.
What I was saying. Did you see something?
Yeah, you saw it in Athens on a throw across the middle on a touchdown.
That was a great throw.
You saw it. And he was a 5-star coming out. Now, to be fair, and Trevor, you saw it at A&M, and then you really saw it at Georgia Tech. But to be fair, for the DJ year in there, when Trevor got COVID, DJ goes into Notre Dame. And by the way, Notre Dame's 7-0 at the time. And DJ goes 29 of 44 for 439 yards and 2 touchdowns, no picks. He threw for more yards than Notre Dame Stadium than anybody's ever thrown for. More than Joe Montana, more than anybody's ever thrown for in the stadium. And so you thought you'd have it going to the next year, and obviously you didn't. And then from Cade's standpoint, what you thought you saw from Cade in 22 is after DJ just stunk it up, Cade goes in against North Carolina in an ACC championship game, and Let me make sure I've got what he says. In that game, he goes 20 of 24 for 279, a touchdown, no picks. Now, obviously, those are four game, four starting quarterbacks you feel excited about. Cade and DJ did not develop, whereas Trevor and Deshaun did. And so that's why you see Clemson fans, you've seen it, you've seen the good and the bad. But they all started out that first game, man, like, oh, man, now we got something. And I don't blame fans for feeling that way. But it is
when
different.
When you talk about development, Mickey, talk about development, I think is to Georgia fans have and some others need to revise their thoughts on Bennett a little bit because you talk about development.
Yeah.
Look at, I mean, from what I understand, Simpson can't take a spot in L.A. They put that pick, I thought was stupid anyway, but Ty Simpson, from what I understand, can't overtake Bennett for the second spot behind Stafford. You might know more about that than I do, but
well, I don't
think
know.
Bennett's so underrated. Even with the size and all, anyway, yeah. I just thoughts out loud.
Good points.
I guess.
Yeah, good points. Good points. All right, buddy. Always good to hear from
you. Take care.
You too. The position is so important, but it is more important in certain programs than it is in others. When you are as good as Georgia is on the lines of scrimmage right now, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it does. You can't go in there, but you can game manage it this year at Georgia. And I think Gunnar Stockton is a good game manager.
You really just need competency.
Yes, that's right. I mean, at Notre Dame this year, your offensive and defensive lines are so good that Carr could be a game manager. At Ohio State, they could be so good. Both those lines of scrimmage are that stinking good. Indiana, that stinking good. Like Ohio State, the receivers you're throwing to, Julian Satan's going to have a good year. With that offensive line, with those receivers, with a good running game with Jackson, like they're gonna be good. And the other advantage that Georgia has is, right now, with this offensive line, this run game, Gunnar Stockton doesn't have to be anything great. Because, now, outside receivers, Georgia does not have receivers. Georgia has tight ends, but Georgia's receiving core is a major, major issue. But I think you're so good on the lines of scrimmage and so good at running football that I think you'll be fine there. Let me see if Phil still has Georgia's wide receivers ranked. Probably overrated at any of these levels, but no. Georgia number 35 at wide receiver. I don't know who's going to play wide receiver at Georgia. Quarterback, Georgia number 4. Running back, Georgia number 6. Offensive line, Georgia number 7. Wide receiver, 35. So, and that's probably counting the tight ends. I imagine this. I've never hosted a sports talk show in Athens, Georgia. But at some point in time, if you're hosting one down there, you're going, man, why can't we recruit wide receivers? Why do we have to go in the portal and get wide receivers? We're not very good at wide receiver. It goes to show you there's just different concerns and different programs all over the country. All right, let's take a short break. We'll come back. Much more on the other side right after this. My friend David checking in from the Emerson Rose Heart Foundation got a big event coming up and a great opportunity for some great folks. Hey, David, thanks for calling in, man. How you doing?
Hey, Mickey, I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I call you friend. I need to call you mentor or pastor or whatever because you helped me so much in my spiritual life through all that. But that's not what we're talking about on the air today. We've got a big event at a great supporting a great cause at a great venue coming up. What's the latest with the Emerson Rose Heart Foundation and golf tournament?
Yeah, so, it's incredible to have an event that goes this long. It was really our first big fundraiser, but this is our 16th annual, which is pretty incredible that the Lord has kind of sustained it that long, and we've had such an incredible support from the community for that long. And this is our second year that we've been able to host it at the Cliffs. So we're going to be up at Glassy again this year, September 28th, end of next month. And, man, I'm just I'm looking forward to maybe some cooler weather, some fall weather up on the mountain. But yeah, we're gearing up and we're getting really excited.
I'm excited about that. And I remember last year we had, we delayed it for about 5 minutes because there was a bear out on one of the greens or something. I'm like, man, yeah, with that kind of vistas and all that. And as you know, after I heard, you know, the story and after I got involved with you guys, I'm signed up. So include me this year. Can't wait to come out and help a little bit. What if folks, how can we sign up? What can we do? What do we need? We need players. We need sponsors. What do we need for the 16th annual tournament?
Yeah. So, you know, just a little bit about what the tournament does for us too. You know, like we are a Pediatric Heart Foundation. If you don't know who we are, we were started, you know, by some folks that lost their daughter. Jason Susan Smith Emerson Rose was their daughter, and 2011, she passed away from a congenital heart defect after about 2.5 months of life. And so, you know, they walked that journey, that hardship down in Charleston, and they experienced it with other people, with other families too. So we've been wrapping around families that are walking through their child having heart issues, you know, all this time. And so, you know, it's something where you don't necessarily know it's out there until you experience it or you know someone that has, but, you know, it's the number one birth defect, and, there's so many different kinds. So, you know, it affects, 1 in 100, and, we serve, you know, 400 to 500 families a year. And so there's a lot of families, and even right here in the upstate, like we're hit the hardest because Charleston is so far. That's our only heart center. So we just try to wrap around families. We try to support them. We support financially, emotionally, and spiritually. We try to provide, you know, just essential needs like transportation, food, you know, help with bills while they're in the hospital. You know, lots of families struggle financially when they step away from their job and they're trying to focus on their sick child. And, you know, you could be in that hospital for 2 weeks. Or you can be in that hospital for 2 years, and that's not an exaggeration. We have a lot of kids that are there waiting on a heart, you know, as they wait on heart transplants. So I could go on and on about what we do there. You know, we actually just opened up a heart house down there, so we actually are housing families down there too. We have a dedicated staff down there that goes in the hospital, visits, cares for them emotionally. So we're doing a lot of things, and we have a lot of different ways that we try to support that heart community. You know, just face to face, but we also do some medical research and quality improvement funding. And we've kind of dipped our toe into some international stuff too. So, lots of things that we're doing, but this tournament is a major part of, funding that cause. And so, whatever the community can do, the upstate community can do to kind of get behind us with this event, we would greatly appreciate it. We've got sponsorship still available. We actually still have two teams available, and we have an Eagle sponsorship that includes a team and includes some promo, you know, of your company, and then we have some other levels like a carton tea, a contest, refreshments, par, which is basically just like a, if you're just looking for low-hanging fruit, you know, just something to get involved really easily, you know, it's like it's a whole sponsor. The par sponsor is $500. So, but yeah, and so if you want to golf with us, that's great too. We're going to have, I think this guy named Mickey Plyler is going to be with us. So that's a reason to come right there. And then we're going to have an incredible raffle and just a beautiful day on the course. So you can go to our website, erheart.org, and you can learn more and you can find out how to sign up and everything right there. But yeah, we're ecstatic. We're so excited. So excited about being able to gather together. We'll have a heart family there sharing their story. You know, the golfers will get to experience, you know, our cause and what we do out on the course. And it's just one of those highlights, you know, just kind of a, no pun intended, but mountaintop experiences for us during the year.
No doubt about it. That is September the 28th. Sign up now, 16th annual tournament for you guys. Sign up now, though, because, you get, you know, and help in any way you can. I want to commend you. The Heart House down there in Charleston was awesome, and I know you love doing that. But as I told you a long time ago, once I met the Smiths and learned about their story, and then I go over there every year now and I hear these awesome stories of these kids, and you see these warriors, and they're making it, and you guys are making a big difference. So I'm on board, man. I'm on board with anything we can do. Tell me about signing up again, the website, and more of what you guys, how folks can learn more about what you guys do and get involved, volunteer, and donate and help out.
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is erheart.org. You can find out, you know, more about us and what we do. You can read our story. You can watch the video. You can also, you know, just kind of keep up with our blog on there. We post, you know, what's coming up, events that we're doing. We do events throughout the state for Heart families. So as they're coming back home, they can bring their families out for a free outing to meet other Heart families. So we always need volunteers for that. And we'll be having one actually at Denver Downs, which is right here in the upstate, in November. So, we would love any volunteers. There's a volunteer form on there as well. And then with the golf tournament again, you can click onto our website and we've got our main slider has the golf tournament there and, folks can sign up right there, you know, to get involved. But, we've got a lot of other things that we're trying to get off the ground too. So if you have a church group that's interested in maybe doing care bags, we are trying to get that off the ground as well. Basically, where volunteers can kind of virtually volunteer, since we don't really have a brick and mortar here in the upstate. It's an opportunity for church groups to get together and to pack care bags for the families that are in the hospital. Write cards, write notes to the nurses, things like that, as well as some really tangible items. So we've got lots of things clicking, lots of things going on. And also just pay attention to us on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram, and we're constantly, just posting stories of these heart warriors, but also ways you can get involved. We do drives virtually through Amazon, wish lists and stuff for our, just needs that we have at the house, needs that they have the hospital. Just get connected with us, and we will communicate as much as we can about ways you can get involved.
Keep me abreast. Sign me up. I'm doing everything you guys need. We'll help in any way. Erheart.org. Erheart.org. And in about 6 weeks, we'll see you guys. Sign up today, though, because a sense of urgency for the tournament, and everyone needs to do that today for sure. David, I always appreciate it, my friend, and can't wait to see you here in a few weeks.
Thank you, brother. We'll have one of those conversation pastoral sessions soon.
Okay? I need it, buddy. I need it. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that for sure.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That's one of my spiritual advisors, I would say, maybe, helping out me as a dad. He's great. He's a great father, by the way. Let me get to our phone lines where Chad, single game season, Chad in Columbia. Good morning, buddy. How you doing?
Good, Nick. I'm going to put you on the spot for a couple questions you can take, okay?
All right. Let me get my pen out.
I remember Yeah, I get it. So Deshaun, came in, and the game was still in balance against Georgia. Like, it was, first quarter or early second quarter. It was the third or fourth series, and he came in and threw the strike to Sherron Peak.
Yep.
Does Tate Reynolds come in Baton Rouge? So this is question number one. If the game's still in balance, kind of third or fourth series, so that's question number one, okay? Question number two, is Dabo in trouble or wrong if Vezina's slightly worse than Cole Stout and Reynolds is worse than a freshman, Kate Klubnik? Okay, that's question number two.
All right.
And then question number three, do you think the overall upside for Reynolds is going to be better than Kate Klubnik as a, because I'm just looking at him from a stature standpoint. I know Tate's thicker, but just from an overall, stature, height, et cetera standpoint, they're kind of similar. And maybe it's because they both have blonde hair or whatever, and I'm being biased for that. But I want to get your thoughts on those three things. Is Dabo in trouble if Vezina's worse than Cole Stout and Reynolds is worse than a freshman Klubnik? So that's question number two. One, does he get reps in Baton Rouge no matter what? And then three, overall upside of Reynolds over the next year or two, can he be better than Kate was in years three or four? I want to get your thoughts on
it. Thank you, single game season, Chad, Columbia. Great questions. I'm going to touch on all three right now. If you'd asked me a month ago, I would say that, or 3 weeks ago, I'd say no, Tate does not take a snap in Baton Rouge. Unless it's a two-point conversion or short yardage kind of deal, package kind of deal. I have come 180 degrees on that. I think he plays in Baton Rouge. Now, again, ask me next week, it could change. You got a couple of scrimmages coming, all that could change. But I think that he has shown them enough in 3 days And I think Vecina's been good too now. But I think he's shown enough in 3 days that at this point in time, I'd say, yes, you will see Tate Reynolds play at some point in time in Baton Rouge with the game in the balance. The second question was, is Dabo in trouble if Stout, Vecina's not as good as Stout and if Reynolds is not as good as Klubnik? Yeah, I think that Dabo needs one of those guys to play well, because if you went in a 27, he's talking about being in trouble, like for your job in 27. You went in 27 and neither of them played well, and you know you have to go to the portal, at least you got the portal safety net there. But no, he needs for one of those guys, and it doesn't matter which one, but he needs for one of those guys to play well and to give you 27 hope. And then the third part of it, compared him to Cade, where is Reynolds now, one week into fall practice of his freshman year compared to Cade? I think he's got more arm talent than Cade. Cade had more experience, but this is a hard question. You came off of four straight quarterbacks, or you had three straight quarterbacks in Deshaun and Trevor and DJ, and you thought, man, these guys were big-time programs, and they started for multiple years. And so Cade's going to come in and play well because he's coming from this big-time program in Austin, and, man, he's just going to play well because of his experience. And as it turned out, the experience was not a factor at all with Cade. Even in his senior year, he was still making bonehead plays. No feel, no – that goes to show you, you never know. You can always say, well, the – I'm trying to think of a program out there that would always have – North Carolina's always going to have a big man in basketball. North Carolina's big men are always going to be great. Well, not all of them are great. And so Cade's experience didn't lead to all that. Reynolds has no experience. Reynolds was hurt as a senior and hadn't played a whole lot of high school football. But body-wise, Reynolds is bigger and thicker than Cade, a stronger arm than Cade. The thought there was that Cade actually, I thought, improved throughout his tenure as far as the arm talent goes. I think he was more accurate, and I think that he had a stronger arm. He got bigger and stronger. And I thought his arm played. I was a little worried at first about his arm strength, but it got better. And he had arm talent, and he made throws. The problem with Cade is he never got over the boneheaded peeing on the carpet moments. And it was always a factor with him. Even in his last game, I mean, all the way from game one to game 40, whatever it was, he was always making these just boneheaded decisions. And at some point in time, you go, that's just who he is. Well, the hope of any freshman quarterback or any young quarterback is that the experience yields better results and you get more comfortable and you get make better decisions and you still develop physically. So I would say at this stage, Reynolds is physically more talented than Cade was at this because he's bigger and stronger and arm strength. And you would hope that where Cade would have the advantage that didn't turn out to be advantage in experience, you hope that Reynolds gets that in college and does progress through it all. If Tate Reynolds is handing the ball to the wrong guy 3 years in, or running out of bounds behind the chains 3 years in, or calling plays, or not understanding the end of a halftime with no timeouts, diving, running play rather than throwing it away type stuff, if he's still doing that 3 years from now, then I think Dabo's in big-time trouble. But the hope is that as experience comes and you kind of know and you kind of have a feel for the game and a feel for down and distance and feel for clock management, feel for all that, eventually you can like outgrow some of those tendencies. But no, I think at this point in time, I think DJ had more upside than all of them, but he couldn't process it. And so the final thought I'll leave you with here is, it's not just one thing that can derail you. Trevor and Deshaun were great at processing. And arm talent, and athleticism, and speed, and body. Like, they had it all. DJ had a lot of it, but couldn't process it. Cade developed, but then he couldn't. He was just boneheaded with just dumb plays and dumb mistakes a lot. Reversing out of the pocket a lot. So you got to have all of it. I think Tate's farther along physically. Hope that answers your question. Final segment after this. in the fourth quarter against Louisville last year. You've been starting for 3 years at quarterback. You take over. You're down 19-13. You take over your 25-yard line. You go on a 10-play, 73-yard drive. You get the ball down inside the goal line. I mean, inside the 5-yard line. And for some reason, you had a dumb play call on a third down. It's third and goal at the 1. And you got Peter Woods in the game as a blocking back, whatever. And so you try to trick him. And so you hand the ball to Peter Woods. And that was the play call. Right play call. Everything's going good so far. Driving down the field. Woods fumbles. And Klubnik recovers the fumble. And it goes back. He's right there at the 1-yard line. The defensive lineman surprisingly couldn't carry the football. And so he fumbled it. And you keep the same personnel in. Now you got Gideon Davidson or Adam Randall. Adam Randall back there at tailback. And you're in the eye once again. Now, on this play, Klubnik tried to hand it to Woods once again. Your quarterback didn't know who to hand it to. But not even the fact that you like this misunderstood the call. Did you think that we were going to hand it to the guy who just fumbled, the defensive line who just fumbled for the second time in a row? Did you really think that was the play call? You thought we were going to do that again? Ended up winning. Texas said, you forgot about the South Carolina pick in 2024. You're rolling out, trying to make a play. You're going to kick a field goal to send it overtime. Or, you know, you got a couple of seconds. You got a minute to go down there if you throw the ball away or to keep the ball and run. And you got plenty of time and all that. But instead, you roll out and throw it off the pads of a running back. Didn't need to do it. Throw a pick. Like, just all that. The North Carolina halftime deal, over and over and over, like this stuff. So how do you account for that? Like, how do you analyze that? It's like time and time again, it was just always something. And you think 4 years into it, that wouldn't be the case.
Some people tried to say he was playing hero ball.
He was.
I don't think he was. I think he was just playing stupid.
Oh, man. Let me get my friend. But by the way, Brad Hughes, Allstate.com, 292-3001. Brad Hughes, Allstate.com, Brad Hughes, Insurance.com. Better coverage, better rates. We could bind them and get the best coverage available. And I love my relationship we have with Allstate and Brad Hughes. So get in touch with them. See if they can help you out. See if they can save you money. Brad Hughes at Allstate.com. To our Pratt Injury Law phone lines, Butch at Fountain Inn. Butch, thanks for hanging on, man. How you doing?
Pretty good, Mr. Lee. How you doing?
Couldn't be better. Fantastic. Blessed.
There you go. We're on the right side of the dirt, ain't we?
Yeah, no doubt. Feeling good about it.
Yeah. Hey, man, I'm loving the conversations this morning. I mean, it's really getting me excited for football. I was just wondering, though, you know, you talked about it last week that y'all's backup quarterback hadn't seen much football since high school.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, tending to an injury. You really think that's a good idea to throw him in against LSU first game?
Well,
what if he gets hurt? Then what you going
to
do?
Well, I don't think you can go into it thinking if you get hurt because you can't really do that. But the fact is that he's healthy now, and hopefully he'll be better now and go that route. But you're going to play your best players at all. But the key there is that what helped you with Deshaun and Trevor is that they had a big experience in good high school programs for many years, and he thought that DJ would have it, and he didn't. He thought that Klubnik would have it, and he didn't. You know, that's the thing about Kelly Bryant. Bryant didn't have a whole lot of experience at quarterback, but it took him a while to develop, and he did a great job of it. But the other guys kind of had that, and they kind of came in as freshmen and did it. And Cade had the experience, but, boy, it never really parlayed into at the college level of just continuing to advance and your understanding of what all's going on around you. He just didn't have that.
Yeah, I remember that flame that you got fired up about just a few minutes ago, man. I mean, sitting there watching that, and I was like, what? Wait, that's a good trick play the first time.
Yeah, put it this way. What he should have done, if he misunderstood the call and thought he's handing the fullback again, where nobody else in the field thought that, he should have called timeout. And going over to Garrett Riley and Dabo Swinney and said, you two guys are the two dumbest guys on earth. because we just handed it to the fullback and he fumbled it. We're not going to do that again, guys. But they didn't call that play. They called it to the tailback. And everybody in the stadium knew they were going to get it to the fullback, except for the defensive lineman, by the way, except for the quarterback who tried to hand it to the wrong guy again.
It was funny, but, I get tickled because, you know, look at my team. Look at what they was doing last year. I had to get to laugh at somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why you not? Know, but, look, and your guy did it over and over and over. How many times did you see Lenore Sellers, all right? This is year two as a starter. How many times did you see Lenore Sellers back there and with all the athleticism in the world and take a sack rather than throwing the football away or run out of bounds behind the chains? Lenore Sellers, you know, if you're outside the pocket, just throw the ball away and it's second and 10. And then how many times did Lenore Sellers run out of bounds 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 yards behind the chains and now it's second and 14, like, or on fourth down? So, you know, on fourth down that we're going to go for it. All right, we're going to roll it out, whatever. And so I can't take a sack. I can't run out of bounds. I got to throw the ball on fourth down. They can get the ball anyway. Let's just throw the ball up somehow, some way. But no feel for the game, man. No feel for the game.
They're going to need to put him on them pills they got me on this year. He won't be so traumatized back there.
I hear you, man. I think about you all the time. And, man, I hope it's going to be okay for you. I hope it's going to go well for you. So.
Thank you, Mick, man. Right, we'll talk to y'all later, man.
Thanks an awful lot. Thank you for your service. 654-ROAR, 654-7627. Text said, never understood the Peter Woods getting those handoffs. Should be something for one when we are way ahead or two defensive players have earned it through effort. Certainly Woods was not didn't have that last year. Well, look, when it works, it's cool because you got maybe my biggest blocking back. Georgia does it, and it works. And when Christian Wilkins was here, it worked. When Dexter Lawrence was here, it worked. Like, yeah, with Peter Woods, it didn't work. So when it works, you're like, oh, man, that's brilliant. You got your big mass guy back there, your athletic guy back there in that heavy package. That's great. Tech said, I'm the only person who hates the heavy package. That's from 4282. No, you're the only person. You're the person who hates it when it doesn't work. When it works, you're like, hey, man, I like that. Yeah. And to his point, he goes, with elite talent like Lawrence and Wilkins, I didn't mind. Problem is, you had Peter Woods. Best music of the day for the final 2-minute drill?
I don't know if we have time, but we'll try.
All right.